Good morning and welcome to Tech Break, episode 29. Still only me, still only Andy, as old friend of mine is still over in New Zealand. Bless him, Adam's gone away to New Zealand for 3 weeks, I think. He's got another 2 weeks to go to come back. So I'm joined by my very good friend, Simon Crisp from Edward Robertson. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning. How are you?
I am absolutely chipper, as we say, for a, what is it? Gosh, Thursday. Last day of the week because of the bank holiday weekend.
You looking forward to Easter?
Yes. Lots of chocolates for me, I think.
I love Easter. It is one of my favourite times of the year.
Is it really? Yeah. Why?
It's just, it's more peaceful than Christmas. I love Christmas as well.
Yep.
But Easter, somehow you can escape everything.
Yes.
Go for walks on the beach, go for walks up in the hills.
It's fabulous.
It's really nice. And everybody, most people tend to close down, so I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, it's very nice that we've got a long weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So, yeah.
2 4-day weeks. Love it.
I tell you what, Fanny. Sadly, I'm working this weekend. I've got a 365 migration to do. But hey, it'll only be a few hours.
People do that, don't they? They say, you know, I'd really like, we've had a few requests for, we'd like something doing at midnight on the 31st. So that's, you know, I understand that. I understand midnight. I understand it's the end of the month, but that also happens to be Sunday in this case, doesn't it?
It certainly
does.
That's
when people, when they're not busy, they want us to be busy.
Yeah, we know about that, don't we?
It's the burden we carry. Gosh,
absolutely. So for all of our listeners out there, Simon, please tell me about yourself and about company.
So I am the joint managing director of a digital agency called Edward Robertson. We are one of the oldest agencies knocking around. So
you're not that old.
thank you. It's very kind. 1996 is when we started.
Goodness,
so I think that's 28 years. So there's a few agencies that are as old as us, but really not many. But
no.
That's you know, I don't know what that says about us. So if we're tenacious, we're just stubborn. We just
all
keep,
the words.
Yeah. We just keep getting up.
when we get
knocked down. But no, it's something I'm quite proud of.
Absolutely.
Right at the very beginning of the commercial internet.
Yeah.
So Google wasn't around.
Goodness me.
Then we can talk about, you used a search engine. There were a couple, but there was one called Lycos with a Labrador on it. I don't know if you remember that. Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
Which was kind of a modern take at AI, I guess.
Yeah.
You could ask it questions
as
opposed to just
searching for something.
Lycos. So did I say Lycos?
Yeah,
Lycos
did,
and Alta Vista. That was
Alta Vista.
I think was my favorite.
Yeah, definitely
search engine. And then of course you didn't use Chrome or Edge. You used weird things like Netscape.
Netscape, I remember that.
Yeah. And that's how we started to build websites.
Wow! So you were really probably one of the first companies around to start doing that. And then
I think so. There was a handful of us.
Yeah.
And I think probably none of us knew what was going on, which was you know, helpful.
Hey, still today I still don't know. I have no idea. What's it? My wife says you smile because you have no idea what's going on.
it's funny, isn't it? Because you need to be in technology. I think you need to be calm.
It's the
whole swan thing, isn't it? You look calm on the surface. And you perhaps are paddling like hell. Maybe you're not underneath, but you've got to be calm because people want calm. They don't want to trust somebody who's running around, bouncing off walls, looking like a lunatic.
Absolutely.
But there is a balance because people also want to feel like you care.
Yeah.
And we do. You care.
Absolutely.
I care. And it's that's a difficult balance, I think, to get.
It certainly is. Yeah, it certainly is. And we've had long chats outside of work where it's just like, yep, what a day I've had. Yeah, you know, obviously telling the customer, yeah, it's absolutely fine, but underneath going, oh my goodness me, what am I doing? And, you know, technology is technology, Simon. For some reason, something doesn't work and you're literally banging your head against the wall going, why?
Absolutely.
Why? But you've no idea why. But then, you know, you get to the bottom of it and you fix it. So that's good. So what else do you do, obviously, in terms of the responsive designs of websites? You do apps, you do a few other things.
That's right. So we build, first and foremost, we build websites, but we also build apps for some of our customers as well.
Lovely.
Let's talk about where our customers are.
Yeah.
So we work nationally throughout the UK. About a third of our work is abroad, so we work in America. We do an awful lot of work in the Middle East, particularly Saudi and Dubai.
Wow.
And we do some work over in the Far East as well.
Goodness
me. Something that's mainly started since COVID.
Right, and how would somebody in the Middle East, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to pick up the phone to Simon in Darlington in the UK. Right.
Well, it's a good question. And it's word of mouth. One of our very good customers, Bannatyne, their chief executive, moved over to a company over in Saudi, and he gave us a call and said, I wonder if you can help us.
Wow.
And we did, and we built them a website, and we built them a join online system. So this is where people can, you know, become a member online. And last year we built them a member portal. So this is somewhere where their members can manage their membership, book classes, buy extra services, renew their memberships.
Yeah.
And this is Fitness Time, which is the company that we've done the work for. They are the largest operator in the MENA, Middle East and North Africa region.
Goodness, right.
They're listed on the Saudi Stock Exchange. It's a really massive, massive company.
So that's a massive coup for you as well, then, getting something like that.
That's right.
Really good.
And thank you. And we've managed this relationship for the last 3 years now. We've been working for them. And it goes from strength to strength.
We
spend an awful lot of time there. And we then got work off the back of that.
Well, so, of course, you would do. Yeah, exactly.
There's probably a little bit more churn of employees in Saudi than there is in the UK.
Right.
So one of the IT directors moved to another company, and they asked us if we could help. And then they moved on to another company, and they asked us if we could help.
Yeah.
We also do work for a company called Core, Core Fitness. Core is an incredible company. They are touted as one of the most expensive gyms in the world.
Goodness.
This is extraordinary luxury.
Does somebody actually exercise for you?
Yes, that would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful, but I want all the benefit. Just do it for me.
And again, you know, we're really privileged to work for them. And we built them a beautiful front end website. And one of the things that we specialize in, or the thing that we specialize in really, is systems integration. So you heard me talk about that with the member system and the join online system. Well, for Core, amongst many things, we've built them a careers system where people apply for jobs and they manage that application process through the sites that we build.
Yeah.
So we've, in the last 4 or 5 years, carved out, perhaps slightly longer, carved out this real niche where we integrate, we build beautiful front ends, but we integrate people's back office systems. You know, the kind of customers that we work for, they've got 4, 5, 6, maybe more back office systems.
Yes,
and they might
of course.
Be CRMs, and they might be membership systems, they might be careers, employment systems, all sorts of stuff. And we're very good at that API integration.
That is a unique niche. I mean, obviously, as you're well aware, and we've spoken about that, Resilient and Adam HubSpot, you know, we do websites.
Of course.
But they're nowhere near at that level that you've done. But actually allowing your customers to go, listen, I can integrate into them, that must be huge for you and for them, because your customers are suddenly going, what? You're telling me that somebody can automatically put their own data and it feeds into this system? That must be great for them.
Yeah. So we don't do WordPress and Magento type work, and that's just not our place in the market.
No, exactly.
But it's probably the biggest bit of the market. And for very many years I was scared to talk about the niche that we occupy.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of like, yeah, we can do that. We're kind of jack of all trades. You know, we're generalists. And I came to the realization that actually we're not. That's not where the majority of our work is, and we should be proud enough to stick our hand up and say, "Yeah, this is what we do. We're integration specialists. It's not something that a lot of people do." And you know, you should come to us if you've got a particular problem. So we've been working a lot with Zoho for one of our customers, directly with them and, you know, that their end customer, doing some integration work, which is extraordinary, really. It's about exchanging, building data warehouses and exchanging 500,000 customer records per day,
yeah,
backwards and forwards. So it's, you know, this is thoughtful stuff.
But it really is. It really is nice to hear that you are taking, you know, again with great respect. Everybody goes, yeah, it's a website. You know, yeah, I mean, sure. I could go to Wix or GoDaddy with the builder. You know, and we all feel that. But you've really taken it to that next level. And obviously, for your customers, they just must be like, oh my God, this is just amazing. You are letting our own end users drive our back end systems. We don't have to do anything. It's just the way that it works now.
Yeah. I hope that they think that's amazing.
With all
customers, there's, you know, people have got challenges that they wish to overcome. And there's really the kind of end goal and the solution,
but yeah.
We are able to provide that. And there's not that many. I mean, of course there are other agencies, knocking around that do that, but there aren't that many that have got particular skills like that.
No, but also with respect, Simon, your company, you know, as you quite rightly said, it's been established a long time, which obviously in the IT market, and I know that as well, you know, I've got customers that said, all right, you know, Resilient, how long have you been going? Oh, 20 odd years. Okay, so you must be doing something right, otherwise you'd pop up and disappear. Yeah. Obviously, as yourself, again, having that whole base of, you know, the largest company that's in the Middle East, that just gives you a great big feeling of going, no, you can trust us. Yeah. You know, and again, we've had these conversations. Sometimes you're like, really, should I keep doing this or should I keep doing that? But actually, you know, you turn around and you do think, actually, I am good at this. You know, you don't wish to be big-headed or like, but no, have pride in what I do, but no, I can help you and look at what we can do. So that's great. I was on your website this morning, obviously knowing that I was going to talk to you.
Okay.
What was really nice for me is, as we've spoken previously, one of my customers is Lane 7, and one of their tricks of the trade is obviously they get a lot of people going to these places for the gaming, for the bowling, and they've tied up with a lot of other people, and one of them was Fat Hippo. Which
okay.
is over that, and I noticed yes. that Fat Hippo was one of your customers.
Absolutely.
And I believe they started up in Newcastle, didn't they?
They did. So we have two offices.
Yes,
so
you do.
When I talk about being joint managing director, I run our Darlington office, which is our head office, and my business partner, he runs our Newcastle office.
Yeah.
And the Fat Hippo website, by virtue of the fact that Fat Hippo in Newcastle
yes.
And Graham's in Newcastle, they do the work for Fat Hippo.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know a huge amount about it, but I do know that Fat Hippo is an amazing place.
Oh, honestly, I mean, we did the... God, I'm going to get this wrong. I think it was the Leicester venue, which
right.
was the old train station. So in the early days, and this was pre-COVID, we were asked to buy Lane 7 to go down. And obviously one of the things that we are very good at in terms of what you were saying about the integration, prior to Lane 7 getting their own sort of like IT team, which again, I'm very proud of yeah. because they've looked at what solutions that we provided and they went, wow, I'm just going to take this and run.
Yeah.
But we can imagine, if you can imagine, we integrate a lot of their network and Wi-Fi
yep.
To customers, as in you and me turning up going at like a game of balls, please. But on the back side of that, you've got Lane 7 Hippo, sorry, Fat Hippo going, well, I need Wi-Fi. I want users to be able to order their food, etc., etc.
Yep.
And obviously I need to go, right, well, I'll give you some network internet, but I need to like segregate you off. You can't have all of it. You know, so that's, again, that good integration. But I was really pleased. I was like, oh, bloody hell, Fat Hippo, because their website, when I went and seen Fat Hippo at Leicester, their website was really fabulous.
Yeah,
and as
yeah.
I say, it was just like, oh, bloody hell, done by Simon Edward
yeah,
Robertson.
Yeah,
so again,
yeah.
it was a great integration. And then the other great thing that I liked is that I've been playing a lot of Sea of Thieves, and obviously that's by Coconut Lizard, which again, one of your... So I was like quite pleased. It was a little bit of a
right.
little bit of synergy. So how is that, again, is that a Newcastle?
That again is a Newcastle.
Yeah.
A Newcastle project, and yeah, we're super proud of doing all of these.
Absolutely,
all
fabulous
these,
looking websites.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
All of these names. Newcastle produce some really, you know, their strength is in brochure sites that are really, really good looking. They're very on brand.
Oh gosh, yes.
And do the business. And I think Graham and his team do a great job of that.
No, absolutely, Simon. And I think one of the things that I was very sort of like, you know, if I can, when I look at a website that we've designed, obviously, as I say, with great respect, it's for, you know, probably one of my smaller customers
sure.
or whatever like that. It looks good. It does what it does. And it's very flexible for what they do. I think when I look at some websites that you've designed, I do think of the high end. And I would like to say the you have got that branding spot on. When I looked at that fat hippo, it didn't say designed by Edward Robertson. Obviously, it did at the bottom. Yeah. But I didn't say it. All I noticed was it oozed fat hippo. Yeah. All the pictures, high quality. The slickness of the website, the way that it allows you to book. So do you handle all of that for them? Or did fat hippo say, no, can you integrate into Open Table or Table Talk?
Sure. So, they give us the brand guidelines. And then we go and create, take that personality and that tone of voice. And we take that and put that on the site. But they've got a number of other systems, which is you reference things like Open Table, that we can integrate sometimes with pop-ups, sometimes with deep integration.
Yeah,
and it works well. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting to me. The web design market. Sometimes people ask, what is the difference between a Wix or a Squarespace site and something that we might create? And when you're just starting, or even actually, some well-established businesses, you can get an awful lot of value from some of these off-the-shelf sites.
Yes, you can.
You can get up and running, and you can control it yourself, and you can do lots of things. But I think the difference that to get really an authentic personality through, you probably have to get your site custom designed.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're probably relying on too many templates and too many structures. Now, it depends. For some people, that just isn't worth it.
No.
When I say I respect that, that sounds patronizing. I think, I'm often asked by people, hey Simon, can you help us? I've got this this business or small business or even a large business. This is what I want.
Yeah.
And I never used to be, but I'm now really happy to say, for me, if it was me, or if I was advising my brother or sister,
but if I was
advising my sister, I would do it on Wix or Squarespace or go and get someone else to do it, because we're not the right partner for that.
That's the bit that I do genuinely like about yourself, and as I say multiple times, we've spoken often. You're not patronizing in any way, but you respect and understand the marketplace that you're in. Yeah. And you are genuinely giving people advice going, we're not for you. So as I said, if I've got a brand new customer coming today, we don't do websites anymore, Resilient. It's the only ones that we do are for my charities and for friends.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, Adam obviously does exactly the same. Yeah. But I also know that I've got you. If I stumbled onto a customer that's like, I've got a particular website, I would know to go, actually, I need to introduce you to Simon because of the way that you've marketed yourself. And that's what I'm saying. The fact that, and one of the questions I'm coming on to is, if you take something like Fat Hippo, it must be, sorry, I'm stuttering slightly, Simon. What I'm getting at is that when a customer comes to me to say, and I say respectfully, I just want a presence on the website. It's like, who am I? What do I do? And this is how you contact me. Okay. For something like Fat Hippo, surely they come to you without that. It must be all about brand. It must all be about look and feel. It's not how the website works. It's like, it's got to look like that. Is that, do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely. So, yes, I think if people have got some very tied down, now, not all companies have got brand guidelines, or tone of voice documents and things like that. But somebody like Fat Hippo, who have gone out and huge success across the whole UK. Design, which is really what we're talking about.
Yes, it is.
Design is such an elevator. Design is very often commoditized by people that don't understand it.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, well, I can get, I can go and get that logo for 50 quid or 100 quid, and people don't really concentrate on it. But proper design can really elevate the bottom line.
Yes.
So there are some studies by the Design Council that talk about the percentage uplift you can get in your bottom line if you do design properly. So people like, Fat Hippo and Coconut Lizard and all these, Fitness Time, all of these companies, they understand the value of design. They understand the value that that has for their brand and how it can elevate them. And if you've got some very particular, if you're passionate about that, if you have invested in that, then you're willing to invest in a company like ours to help you put that online. And it's very often a journey. People don't start with a full-on vision of this. Or very few people do. This is exactly every single page I want. This is what, you know... And we would encourage people to learn. You know, you learn...
Oh, gosh,
put something down on the table. Introduce it to people. This is our website. And then you yourself, as a marketing director, a marketing manager, you understand, maybe we'll do this. Maybe we'll have this feature. You maybe get feedback from your users and friends that tell you what else you need to do. So these things are very organic and change. I think very few people start with, this is exactly what I want. And that's, you know, that stays like that for 2-3 years.
So with Fat Hippo, you know, if you don't mind me asking, was it a joint venture, or were they very much, it must look like this, it has to be like this?
We didn't do it in the Darlington
office. No, sorry, I appreciate that.
So I don't want to take any. You know, Graham and his team do an amazing job. They manage the relationship.
Yeah.
It's fabulous what they do. So I can't really speak for
them. Take another customer.
Very often, the very best relationships that you have with customers is where you're true partners.
Yes,
and there's a lot of chemistry, isn't there?
Right? Oh, gosh,
so,
yeah.
You know, I nearly said this when you were talking earlier about different types of customer. I think that when you employ a design agency or a consultancy, an IT agency, apart from are they technically competent, can they provide the value that I want, can they elevate us, apart from all of that, you just need to be able to get on.
Yes.
Because times will be good and times will be hard. And if you don't have a really strong relationship, or there's no chemistry there, then I think it's kind of a bit sucky. So that's it just doesn't work. So you need to be able to, because it comes from trust, doesn't it? Right?
100%, Simon. I think one of the other things that Resilient did when in the early days, I often find that as we were growing. Obviously taking on, you know, Eddie and Dan, I always find that it's better, sadly, if you have a customer and in the very first early days, you almost have like a crisis, because it helps you determine, you know, so you were talking about trust there. I remember a customer, I'll keep the name quiet, but they did have a ransomware probably within the first week of us taking over. Right. Got nothing to do with us in terms of that, but... the way that Resilient reacted, the way that we suddenly went, let's understand how it happened, reverse back. Obviously, we had backups then, because that was one of the first things we did. That actually cemented that relationship, because the customer was like, I don't know what we would have done if we hadn't had you. Thank you so much.
Yes.
The way that we reacted, the way that you sort of like say, it doesn't matter about the time or the cost at the moment in time. We need to get you up and running. Because I was saying to the customer, well, if you go down, as in you've lost so much money you have to fold the business, well, where does that leave Resilient? So you're right. In terms of that trust and that relationship, I think that takes so much between two customers. It allows you to get through anything, I think.
Yes, no, I agree.
Yeah.
And I, certainly during COVID, I learned the power of relationships. Mm. And I think I always understood it. I mean, I think a bit like you, if I dare say this, you know, you enjoy talking to people.
You know,
part of the reason you do what you do is because you want to help people,
yeah.
Right? And we're very, very similar. We want to just help people. We want to make them happy.
Yeah.
And COVID taught us that relationships were really important. So when everybody was exceptionally stressed, they didn't know if their businesses were closing down, they didn't know if they'd have any revenue.
Absolutely.
People were phoning up and some people saying, oh, I'm not sure if we can keep doing this on a month-to-month basis. With strong relationships, you could help people see things through.
Yes.
And it turned out that we were busier than we were ever be.
Yeah.
But you didn't know that, you know, in the dark.
No.
It was about, was it 4 years ago, almost exactly about now? You know, it's a very dark days, wasn't it?
It was, and I know that we were travelling back from a customer when we suddenly, you know, you started hearing the news and you're like, they'll never shut the UK down. Yeah. You know, they can't. And then, oh my God, they have.
Yes.
And I think every single customer, whether it was, you know, small like Resilient, large like yourself, or conglomerates, they were just going, oh my gosh, what do I do? And we all went through that times. Now, again, touch wood, Resilient were as busy as ever because suddenly the phones lit up. Yeah. I want to work from home, Andy. You know, what's this Teams thing you've been telling me about that telling you? Bugger off, I don't need it. I need it now. We built up a lot of strength relationships. Myself and Michelle and the team, we work stupid hours. But again, because we did that, I think I've got some of the strongest relationships that I've got now with some of my customers. And again, touching on that, you know, in terms of the IT support that I provide, I'm not the most expensive, but I'm also not the cheapest. But people like, no, Andy, I trust you. I trust you and your company. You were there for me when I needed you. And as you were saying, it's all about that relationship. Yeah, it's interesting. Just before I move on to some of the other tech, again, forgive me if this is not not your area again, Darlington or Newcastle. So the Roam app, was that something that you did as well with the lion?
That's Newcastle.
That's Newcastle again, right? I'm sorry. It was just again that jumped out at me because apparently, you know, if I say Edward Robertson designed that logo, I read the story.
Oh,
this
sorry.
Morning.
Do you know what? I didn't hear. I'm looking at you. I thought you said the roadmap.
No, the Roam.
Yes, Rome. Yes, we did.
Oh,
so Darlington
excellent.
Did do that,
right?
So Andy, who owns that business, he came to us with some rough sketches about what he wanted. And Alan is a really talented designer in our office.
He designed
the branding and the logo, and I think it looks we did some custom fonts for them.
Yeah.
And I think it's really strong, and it's one of the kind of well, we're proud of all of the stuff.
I think it particularly
stands out.
Yes.
The way that brand was developed.
No, well, again, from my point of view, looking at it, seeing it, yeah, you're right. You're proud of every job that you do, but you know, certainly for me, that jumped out. And I'm like, wow, this must be incredibly proud to see that, to see the lion. Yeah. And again, that journey that you took, Andy, from Rome on. Again, that's a superb story in terms of what you've done and developed it. And again, I keep going back to it, that must have been not, listen, I've got this. He must have come with the idea, the whole thing. You know, I've got some rough sketches, as you say, but to help him develop and see where that is, again, incredibly proud and really good work in terms of that.
No, and again, this comes back to problem solving and helping people. And he came to us with a problem. You know, he needed some brand, he needed some logo. And then there was an educational piece around, well, what is identity? What is logo? What is brand? How do we flesh all of that out and develop that so you can use it not just on the app, but on your website and on offline marketing materials as well. Stickers, flags, T-shirts, all over the place. And, yeah, branding isn't something we... You know, we're not a branding agency,
no.
But we've, through our design team, we can do some really great work.
And you were saying about to Alan, and obviously, again, he came up on a lot of the portfolios that he was doing. But again, that for Alan and again for you as a company, you know, he must like be walking something like I did that. You know, so again, you've got what I also feel is the people that you've got in there. Every single one of them comes out there happy, you know, I laugh and chat with them and stuff like that. And that's a great atmosphere you've got. You know, even when I nip in to see you, I'm sort of like, hey guys, how's it all going? Like, yeah, very, very busy, he's a slave driver. But the key is I always find there's a buzz within your office. There's always a lot of work going on.
Yeah, there is a lot of work going on. Everybody says this and it sounds so trite from some people, but the team... And I know you understand this as well. The people that you have, the colleagues that you have, they are the most important thing.
100%,
and
yeah.
I knew nothing when we started 20 years. I mean, I knew less than nothing. it was just embarrassing, actually. I mean, it was total shambles, really, when we first started 28 years ago.
Yeah.
And I genuinely feel this, that every year I learn as much as I have in the previous year.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of real steep exponential growth.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
Personal growth. And what I understand more and more is or what I totally understand, is that your team is the most valuable bit of your business.
Yeah.
And who you hire, who you bring into that team is really important. So just as an example, we used to do tech tests for programmers. And we would spend a lot of time trying to think of things to trip people up, or, you know, oh, we'll really get to the bottom of, you know, are they competent? We don't do them anymore. It turns out they're garbage.
Yeah.
less than rubbish. We discovered, and, you know, I'm sure this is just part of me growing up as an adult, and most people knew this anyway, but it turns out that actually it's their personality.
Yes.
So we spend a lot of time talking to people, and it's not just me, it's two or three other people in the interview process, and we invite people back another second time, and we just have a chat, not unlike what we're doing here, and try and find out who they are, what makes them tick, what they do under moments of pressure, how creative they are, what their attitude is towards a number of things, but particularly around the values that we have. And these aren't values that are imposed by Simon. These are values that we have as a team developed, and that's important. So I understand that, and I don't get this right all the time, but I understand more and more that the more you invest in your team, the more that you get the right people, you train them properly, and allow them to train themselves properly, you have a collaborative atmosphere, the more you have that, then the more that will just manage your bottom line for you, the more that it will strengthen the relationships that you have with your customers. And, yeah, you know, when people come into the office, I think it's a nice atmosphere where it's certainly, sometimes it's really fraught, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Just before holidays, like now, you know, there's a lot of stuff that people want to get over the line. I'm tremendously grateful. I'm tremendously proud of the people that we have. And, you know, there are some people that have worked for us. I mean, our head of hosting, he's worked for us for nearly 27 years.
Goodness me.
In fact, he's worked for us for so long, nobody actually really knows how long he's worked for us for, which is it's kind of bizarre. So he can't possibly have worked any longer than... 1996, November 96, when we started, but when he actually started, no one, it's kind of quite mythical. And, you know, we've got other people that have worked for, you know, 20 years plus. You know, they, you know, what they've given to the business is extraordinary.
Honestly, Simon, listening to you there, there's a ton of synergy. You know, I've got a great team, as you know, you've met them all, and I think it's important you do allow them to be themselves. You know, everybody's got a valid point. Everybody's got the ability to communicate, and obviously, in terms of where I come from, you know, I do remember in the early days, you would sort of like think, I'll give Simon a job to do. You did it, and you did it very well, but I was like, I could have done it in half the time. But you really got to back off and go, but the strength that Simon's got is I know that I could give him that job, and he will do that to the best of his ability. And I think once you realise that, and you go, I don't care that it took twice as long. It's something that I now don't have to do myself, because obviously I see you, bless you. You know, you sat there. I remember when I popped my head in to do the interview, I scared the crap out of you because I just knocked on the door because she was so focused.
Yes.
But, you know, you get what I'm saying. I speak to a lot of the people in your business, in your team, and they've just got their own thing to do. But I think what I'm getting here is it's like they're all individually skilled, but you do have that whole team attitude. It is... You know, we are Edward Robertson, and that's what I feel about resilience. And we are resilient, you know, and obviously speaking openly about Dan, sometimes he's like, I need you to make this phone call to this customer because I'm not sure how he's going to take it. The fact that he can ask me to do that, the fact that I've got the relationship with the customer, and interestingly, we had an issue yesterday with a VoIP number. So the customer basically said, I'd like you to implement VoIP, Andy. We submitted that to BT, and basically, unfortunately, BT got it completely wrong. And the number disappeared for 24 hours. So obviously that customer's going, Andy, nobody can call me. I have no way of getting anybody to call me. I'm losing business.
Yeah. Will it ever come back?
Correct. Will it ever come back?
Is it lost forever?
Yeah. The good news is all I could do was that I wasn't sort of like panicking, you know, like you were saying, the swan underneath. I'm like, listen, mate, let me sort it all out for you. I gave him regular updates. I made sure that I got it all sorted in the end. But the fact that he went, God, Andy, that was awful. And I'm like, yeah, but that's fine. These things happen. It's tech, as you were saying before. But the fact that you kept that relationship, you kept informing him, I was chasing BT, I was chasing my supplier, I wasn't hounding him, I wasn't giving him rah on the phone, having that calm, but like, listen, I know this is really killing you, but bear with me. The less time I spend talking to you, the more time I can spend like fixing the issue, but giving him that regular update so he didn't feel like, I've not spoken to you for 4 hours. Like, no, here's what's happening. Unfortunately, there's no more news. That's okay. That's fine, Andy. Keep me involved. Keep me informed. Absolutely. So, yeah, you know, going back to what you were saying. So, switching tactics slightly, how do you use tech itself? Obviously, I look in your office, there's a myriad of computers. There's loads of screens everywhere. But obviously, in terms of how you use tech itself, you know, is it Macs? Is it high-end processing power machines? You know, give us a little bit of an explanation about what you do there.
Okay, it's a really good question. Which I do know the answer to.
That's usually
so
a good thing.
Yeah. So we give developers and designers the choice about the operating system that they wish to use.
Yeah.
Most choose Macs.
Yeah.
I would say 2/3 of the business uses a Mac.
Yeah.
And a combination of desktop and laptop, and the rest use PCs.
Yeah.
Some are ambidextrous, so I have a Mac at home and I've got a PC in the office.
Yeah.
We have two, sometimes three screens for those. We use a number of things within our software tech stack.
Yeah.
So we use Google Suite. So,
okay.
You know, your Office 365, we use Google Suite. And we use that for email and for documents and for spreadsheets.
Excellent, yeah.
I really like it for collaboration.
Yeah.
We use Asana for project management. So again, there's a number of tools out there. And we have changed. We used to use something called Trello.
Yes.
Which is kind of very very similar, but we use Asana. And we like Asana for a couple of reasons. One is each of our customers has their own board, but also each member of staff has their own board. So we can manage the priorities on the customer's board and also manage the priorities on the developers or the programmer's board. And people can see what their project looks like.
Yeah.
And you know, these tools are phenomenally complicated. So we're always learning. We're trying. One of the things that we do in the business and try to do is forever just. We have a kind of wash up, you know, at the end of a project. What went well to start with, and then what could we do better?
Yeah, absolutely.
Next time around.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't be afraid of that.
No,
and you know sometimes it's like, well, everything went badly, and that, you know, that's just life, right?
Exactly.
But you can either keep repeating it and keep making the same mistakes, or you can have a culture and a place where you're trying to be better every time.
Yeah,
that's kind of where we are. So we use Asana for our project management, and I never used to believe this, but I do. The older and wiser I become, and I'm still not half as wise as I wish to be. But transparency to the customer is so very important. You know, you're talking about comms backwards and forwards. So we have the tasks on the Asana board, and we're very transparent with that to the customer.
Yeah.
So that's our project management. We have a number of servers internally. So we run a custom CRM system, our intranet, on one server internally. We've got another couple of servers that we run internally, which are normally for kind of backups or for files that people send. And then we have a whole stack. We have about 30... slightly more actually, maybe 30 servers across a number of cloud providers, which gives us some resilience. So we do stuff across AWS, Google Cloud, and also DigitalOcean. And that's where we that's where we host our sites for our, no, for that's our, interesting. For our customers.
Okay, so two things I'd like to pick up on that, and again, it's interesting in terms of our synergy. So you were saying about, you know, what went good about a project, what went bad about the project. Sure. If I just literally step back about that BT port number going wrong, obviously it was terrible for the customer because it's like nobody can get in contact with me. Once we've got that resolved, I spoke to my supplier and went, right, how do we stop this happening again? Because it wasn't my fault, it wasn't the customer's fault, it wasn't my supplier's fault, and in reality, it wasn't BT's fault, because things go wrong with tech.
Sure.
So anyway, what we've decided now is that the next time that we port a number, what we're going to do is speak to the original provider before Resilient get hold of the number, and obviously in terms of a VoIP Simon, we get a brand new number that is a temporary number until I get the actual 01325, you know, whatever Simon's is. Now what we're going to do is we're going to put a divert on, yep, from the original number to this brand new number, yep, because apparently, according to BT, is even if we lose that number, as in the 01325,
sure,
the divert will still kick in.
Yes.
So I've learned it wasn't pleasant having that conversation with that customer, but afterwards you're like, how can I stop that happening again?
Yes.
And not a lot of businesses, you know, and I say that respectfully, I don't think a lot of businesses do that, because it's painful. You mentioned that word. Because you're like, well, why would I hanker on something that's like really bad? But unless you do it, I believe you don't learn.
No, that's right. I've got this phrase, which isn't mine, I borrowed it, which is called hug the cactus.
Yes.
And this, you know, the idea that you've got to really embrace the painful reality of either, yeah, what you've done personally, or the mistake that you've made, or the circumstances that came towards you.
Yeah.
And I think the mistake that people make is, and certainly I've made in the past, is that you think that you should only do one wash up.
Yes.
Whereas if you see it as a continual learning,
yeah,
and you know, every time we're going to get better, every time we're going to get iterating. So perhaps the next time you port the number, the same problems happen. And the idea isn't just to kind of knock it on the head and say, well, you know, there it is. It's, yeah, just a shambles, this. You just try again. And,
yep,
and I get the sense that you're a real optimist.
Yes, you know, that's, definitely.
And you have to be, right?
Oh, gosh, yes.
If you're not, I think there's problems. But you need to just optimistic, not dumbly, but just optimistically keep trying and keep getting better.
Yeah, but the other thing that I picked up on what you said there, and it's interesting, is that, again, a lot of people, well, let's put it this way, I run into a lot of companies that use software X, you know, and it's like, oh, and they're constantly complaining, it's crap, it's rubbish, it does this, that. Okay, so take stock and move. Now, I've invested too much time into that. I've not done this and it won't do this. I cannot take the pain of moving. But you must have had that, because Trello is a fairly good piece of software. I actually know Trello, and I think a number of my customers, you know, they may start on Microsoft Planner because it's easy, you know. They may move to something like Monday.com and then Trello. I actually do know Asana is like a real big step. Yeah. But that must have been a big step for you as well, and a big upheaval.
It was a big upheaval. And we learned, you know, we needed project management software.
Yes.
We'd seen Trello. We liked the idea of boards. We liked the idea of, you know, particularly, you know, the kind of Kanban style that you can, yeah, stack priorities and move priorities, yeah, around. But what it's not built for agency. And
no,
you know, it doesn't claim to be built for agency, no, right? No. It's built for a single company running multiple projects.
Yeah.
Now, we're a single company, sure, but we're running multiple projects, but we're running them for multiple customers and we have multiple people working on those.
Yeah.
So we needed to have this secondary dimension where a colleague, a programmer or a designer had their own board and the customer has a board. Now, the same card, and hopefully not getting too technical, but the same task, let's call it, you know, design the logo,
yeah,
for Rome. That would appear on the customer's board at the very top, but it would also appear on Alan's board,
yes,
at the very top. And underneath design the Rome logo might be build the club timetable for Mode.
Yes.
And Mode's got nothing to do with Rome,
nope,
but it has got a lot to do with what Alan has to do next.
Yeah.
So Asana, yeah, we just... we learned from our experience with Trello what we could do, and yeah, the upheaval was worth it. I think interestingly, people very often see software as a silver bullet.
Yeah,
they, you know, whatever it may be, something, you know, straightforward, some bit of Office 365, or in this example, Asana or Trello. They see it. This gives me the answer. If I only use Asana,
yeah,
then I'll be amazing project management. And no, exactly.
No.
So you very quickly learn, don't you, that actually it's the people that operate it. It's the consistency with which they do it.
Yeah.
There's training. There's all sorts of stuff. You know, people can use Asana in many different ways.
Yeah.
So we need to talk as a business about why we should use it in a particular way. And I think that why is important, because that reinforces, you know, it,
yeah,
it helps
definitely.
People continue to use it in that method.
Yeah.
I think that if you can always be learning, I really like this phrase, that if you can be really explicit in the way that you discuss why you do things, you know, really, you know, hey Simon, I would really like you, please, to use Asana, the communication function, in this particular way. And the reason we do it is for X, Y, and Z. You know, this kind of being really intentional about how you talk to people within your team about how we use things and why we use things, and keep reinforcing that. That then allows you to get the power out of these bits of kit.
No, I couldn't agree more, because not every software is the silver bullet. I use some software from Ancentral, Enable, very expensive, but it does a lot of my proactive work. But there's something I don't like about it, you know. But again, if you embrace it and you actually start to think, well, okay, then if it doesn't quite work for me the way that I wanted it, how can I adapt my procedures? Because again, I've come into contact with a lot of customers that, you know, they're filling in a field, like company name, but they're putting a date into it. And I'm like, what are you doing? It's like, well, the software doesn't do what, so I'm adapting, you know. And I'm like, well, that's great, but it's in the company field. If I bring somebody brand new in and go, please put the date into the company field, they're just going to look at me and go, what?
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, we are HubSpot premier partners. So
nice.
We do lots of integration work for our customers who put HubSpot in.
Yeah.
And very often people will come to us and say, hey, we've just got HubSpot and we'd like it integrating.
Yeah.
And so, you know, two words, HubSpot integration, those should be big ticks for us.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. We integrate stuff. Customer often hasn't thought through everything that HubSpot can do. And you know, in many ways, you know, why should they? They've got a problem, right? Which is CRM.
Yeah.
And they've got this piece of shiny kit, but they don't really know how to drive it. And it can be driven in 20, 30 different ways.
Oh, it has to be.
Part of our skill is to be able to come to the party and say, well, you know, based on what your business objectives are, then I think you should do it like this.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Salesforce. Sometimes, you know, you hear people say, we've got a customer right now and they've said, we're going to get Salesforce. And I kind of shudder.
Yes.
Because I think to myself, crikey, you know, do they really know what they're going to do with it? So Salesforce, you know, for those that don't know, Salesforce is like HubSpot on steroids.
Oh,
isn't it?
You
know,
huge.
It's huge. It's a real ecosystem in itself. Very complicated. People get stuck in the weeds of HubSpot,
yes,
of Salesforce. And although it's off the shelf, you can spend tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds getting it to where you wish it to be.
Yeah.
But it in itself isn't, again, it's not the silver bullet. It won't fix any of your problems unless you've got good processes, good business analyst helping you understand how you're going to actually drive this thing.
No, I totally agree with that one. And that's, again, something that I find interesting, that with yourself and the stuff like that, obviously through this chat, you know, you obviously really get to the nitty-gritty of that customer. You're not afraid to say this. You know, it sounds as though you really sort of like lay it on the line for the customer. Not in a bad way. It's like, look, in order for me to deliver what you're asking me to deliver, I need to get to the nits and, you know, the nuts and the bolts.
Sure.
And certainly for resilient, that's very similar. It's sometimes a difficult conversation. I always say this to my new, you know, when I've got a brand new customer, I'm like, we're going to have some fights. That's because I don't wish to be nasty, but I'm being harsh. So, you know, they may ask me a question or that I may, why have you not done this? Like, what was the one a couple of months ago? A brand new customer, bless them. I was like, where's your risk register? Don't have one. It's in my head. Like, how on earth can you have a risk register in your head? Because who knows about it apart from you? It was a difficult conversation because he was like, but I don't need a risk. Every customer needs a risk register.
Sure.
Purely for the fact that if you say to me, where's your UPS, where's your backups? I don't have one. I need it written down on that risk register. You know, so all of these things, it's great, the synergy that I'm hearing.
It's interesting that, isn't it? Because there's some really boring, dull stuff that sits behind what you... So, you know, you would... I mean, you'll get hired for loads of reasons. But one of them might be I need Office 365,
yeah.
Or you know I've got you know I need Wi-Fi, you know, proper Wi-Fi,
yes,
not like home Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
you know, I need a proper mesh system, and I need guests to be able to log in. All this kind of really kind of high end stuff. But behind that is a whole load of process.
Yeah,
there's a whole load of security. There's a whole load of kind of documentation. Your experience of what the best piece of hardware is, what the best manufacturer is for this, the way that you set up those security policies, the hardware that sits behind the, you know, the disk or whatever it is, the wire,
yeah,
the
yeah.
Meraki piece or whatever it is,
yeah.
that you've got, and it's really difficult to sell that, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
To your customer that
yeah.
there's some, I guess you would put it under. There's many umbrellas you could put it under, but you would put it under this kind of governance piece.
Yes.
And that governance landscape is forever changing.
100%.
It's completely mobile. So you as a business have got to keep on top of it. You've got to keep learning about these things. But it's this boring stuff in the background. And us as a business, you know, we came from a place where there was no governance. No one really knew anything.
No.
To the place where you're dealing with some really quite serious stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Where people are, you know, people's websites that we look after are transacting millions of pounds a month.
Yeah.
And you have to have in place systems which can keep that safe. And we're forever learning, and we are forever expanding our knowledge. I think the thought that you can be 110%... safe is the wrong place to start this conversation.
Yeah,
there are lots and lots of things that need to go into that piece.
Yeah,
that governance piece. And I enjoy that bit. It's possibly put a few more grey hairs on my head than I wished it to.
Absolutely.
And kind of it's one of these things, isn't it? That the kind of the more you learn, the more your team learns and expands. It's. You've got to stay calm because the kind
yes.
of more frightened you get about it all.
Oh.
But that's why you need to write it down, because nobody wants a partner who looks after them
no.
to be scared.
No.
You want them to be competent and to be able to show why they're competent.
No, exactly.
Like you do.
No, exactly. So again, interesting points on there. One of the things that I'm very proud of from Resilience, so when I took over Lane 7, they had, I wouldn't say a poor network quality. They were a growing company. The network was important to them. They obviously took me on board and they said, right, I need you to get me what you believe you class
sure.
As the best system. I implemented something called Ubiquiti, which is, you know, great software and great hardware for stuff like that. But I always remember speaking to one of the guys going, how much? Because obviously he'd done this to help himself, but now I was introducing this, and he was going, but it's like five times more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you go from the kind of £200-300,
yeah.
whatever, you know, you might buy it out of PC World.
Correct.
To proper corporate kit.
Correct.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
I implemented all of this Ubiquiti. God bless me, they trusted me, I implemented it. But what was really, really good for me, Simon, is that they then said, and we were heavily involved back then with all of their networking, right, we're going to go for a new system where guest Wi-Fi, you know, we're going to, and it's a company called Stampede, lovely, lovely company. And I remember being in the meeting and they went, right, one of the most important things is the integration. When the user logs in, it has to be seamless. And therefore, what we would like is we'd like to know what hardware that you've got. Now, top of the list should be, you know, this thing. Now, in terms of preference, we have, and the guy brought the slide up, top of the list was Ubiquiti. I just stood back and I went, it's just great. Yep. So instantly I took over and went, yeah, you've already got Ubiquiti. And he went, right, you have just made our job so much easier.
Sure.
So again, that was good. But that conversation of like, you know, jump to this, believe me and trust me, really, really, really good. The other thing I wanted to pick up on, how have you felt the landscape move as in terms of like security? Unfortunately, 99% of my job nowadays is trying to keep people safe from the ransomware, some of the stuff like that. Are you finding that, not your websites, but websites are more of a target now, or have you adapted to that landscape?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a huge thing.
Yeah,
and it's an evolving thing, there's the stuff we see on the news, right?
Yeah.
Like ransomware.
Yeah.
It's quite easy to understand. The way that we approach security is to reduce the surface area of attack.
Right. Interesting concept. Yeah, I like that.
The sheer volume of people trying to attack websites is just off the charts.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
You've got to be very secure in your processes, otherwise you would just never sleep.
No, you wouldn't. Absolutely,
you would just never sleep. Yeah. And it isn't the sexy stuff like ransomware. It is other things that that happen. And most hacks happen because the system hasn't been set up properly.
Yeah.
There's not been enough imagination about how people can infiltrate people's systems. So it's human error.
Yeah.
It's pieces of code that are written at speed because people want things done quickly and not tested properly. I think that if you really knew what was going on the internet, you would probably never shop online.
You would
again.
Never, ever, ever.
And that's why, you know, when I shop online, I try, you know, I know what a secure checkout
looks like. Yeah.
So the kind of on a Shopify style website, these have these kind of shop, you know what a Shopify website looks like because the checkout tends to end with a map.
Yeah.
At the very end of it, these are pretty secure kind of sites checkout. You'll see some checkouts which have kind of got Stripe integrated onto it, or it goes off to a SagePay page or Elavon page as it is now, or a Barclays Merchant Services page, something like that. These are the kind of sites that you'd wish to shop on.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming back to the original question, which is, you know, how do you see this thing changing? Really, it's keeping well ahead of the regulations.
Yeah.
And having documented proper process.
Yeah.
And belt and braces and trying to lock things down as hard as you possibly can. Very often, you know, customers will want you, you know, they want to work from home. They want to be able to do things that are flexible to them. And there are ways to allow that to happen. But there are also some really fairly sloppy ways that you can have that happen.
Yeah.
So having it ingrained in the culture of the business, I think, is very important. Having third-party testing is really important. So we lean heavily on getting other people to mark our homework.
Good.
And I think that's a great way to start. And if you don't talk very openly about it to your customers, then I think that's that's also trouble. And again, it's evolving for us. You know, we've we've learned a lot of things over the years, and we are leaning into it in a heavier and heavier way.
And you have to, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, that's right, exactly. I mean, our customer in Saudi, I mean, our typical customer probably has their own IT team.
Yes.
You know, you were talking about that a little earlier. They probably have their own marketing team as well. And we are their 12th man.
Yes.
But they will rely on us for advice about how things happen. So the company in Saudi, they have a massive IT team, but they also have a fairly large infrastructure team, and they lean on us about how it's set up.
Yeah,
but we have, and this again, I think we talked about relationships, but we have a really strong relationship with them, and we discuss ideas. It's not like, well, we're just going to follow everything that you guys say, or likewise, you know, we're just going to follow everything that you recommend.
Yes.
We have. You know, we'll discuss things. We'll say, well, you know, we can't do this because of this reason, or we can do this because of that, or have we thought about X? What about Y?
Yeah.
You know, and these are, that's what I particularly enjoy about our job.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have, 2 weeks ago, actually, we had a conference call with, and we have conference calls every day.
Yeah.
This particular customer in Saudi sometimes twice a day. But we had a conference call where, we had Azor on the phone and their security experts. We were on the phone. Another party, third party, was on the phone, plus their infrastructure team.
Wow!
And we were, you know, we were discussing how we harden this this system even more.
Yeah.
And that's not because I've had any problems, but it was just, you know, how do we harden
it's
this?
Like you said, though, you really need to keep that one step ahead.
Yeah.
You know, we're moving slightly in terms of this year. We, you know, everybody has antivirus. We're starting to move to something called Sentinel One, which is more expensive. And the customer, like anything, is like, but why? Why do I need it? Some customers don't want to get that extra cost. But Sentinel One, it's learning algorithms, and it looks for processes. It's like Simon never normally does this on his machine, so it flags it as a warning because every day it's learning what you do. But again, some customers are like, I don't need it. It's more expensive. It's just something I can't do. And the problem is, why do I need it, Andy? It's like, because there are thousands and thousands of very naughty people out there that run their business just like 24/7, and they're constantly trying to hack you.
And the important thing to realize about these, you know, whoever they are, is that they don't want you.
No.
They don't know you. They don't care about you.
No.
You know, no matter if you're the biggest this or the smallest that, they don't care. But because the internet is based on IP numbers, you know, essentially anonymized, you know, you're just an anonymous bit in an address book.
Correct.
And they're just scanning through them, and they're just looking for you making a stupid
mistake.
Oh,
I know. It's terrible.
And that's and they'll bump into you, and they'll take you. And it's the, as you're saying, really, it's the mistake that the people make. It's the phishing email. It's the bad password.
Yeah.
And this software stuff can't totally protect you from your own ignorance.
No.
So train. I know you do. You know, you provide lots of training to people. But I think a business, you know, it's always inconvenient. It's always too much money. But people don't understand how some fairly basic stuff and some investment that has to happen will get you to a much, much safer place. You know, whether that be single sign-on or 2FA. I mean, that's one thing I would say to people about using kind of e-commerce sites or any kind of site. If you have the option to create your profile using Google or Facebook or whatever it is, then take that.
Absolutely.
When you set a password on your... That sounds like kind of whatever, safe shopping 101.
Absolutely.
But when you set a password, always, 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 always use, you know, right-click in the password box and use what Chrome or Edge will offer you.
Yeah, because it's a complicated
password. It's a complicated password. It's unique. And when that website gets hacked, which God forbid it won't, but when it does, they will only see that string. They won't see your dog and your wife's name plus your birthday, which you use to get into your online banking, right?
Yeah.
So I think that we need we need to desperately improve processes, talk to people about why inconvenience is important. We did some 2FA stuff for a customer. Every time they log into their admin, they get sent to their email address, a code. And, you know, they hated it.
Yeah,
But because they trust it, you know, we said, look, I know you hate it. I know it sucks. I know it takes extra time.
But.
And there are, you know, there are other ways that we can do this with authenticator apps and text messaging and all sorts of things. But this will keep you safe.
Yeah.
And by the way, you should have insurance.
Absolutely.
And you're going to have to say that this is what's on your system.
Yeah, we've said it before, Simon. Unfortunately, I was talking to Des Wright last week from Pooka, and he said it as the weakest link in the chain as a human. Oh, I can't be bothered with this. I just want a simple password. I just want simple this and stuff like that. So anyway, we're rounding off. That's come to our hour. So what we normally do is we normally finish off by going, what are you doing for the weekend? You've got a long weekend ahead. So anything exciting, anything particular?
I'm not doing that much, which pleases me hugely. I intend to go for a long walk with my dog.
Good.
And my wife. I intend to cook some good food. My parents... My parents and my twin sister and her family always come to our house on Good Friday
for
fish pie.
Yes.
So that is something I'm really looking forward to.
Oh, very good, very good. So that's going to be a long weekend and that sounds like some good stuff. Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and effort. And hopefully I'll drag you back in 6 months' time and see how far you've managed to go. But it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
All right, thanks to everybody out there. Goodbye.